Three phases of the mind. I like that one. Isn't that type nice? Talking to somebody's design. Three phases. Okay, the totality of the mind is vast and complicated. However, it's helpful to look at the entirety of the mind in three basic phases. So again, we're trying to build a common vocabulary, particularly for those who aren't super familiar with Gurudeva's teachings. Now, when we go through some classes, the next four classes up in Koke'e, if the vocabulary, having a common vocabulary is the biggest challenge we'll face. I will use a term and you have no clue what it means. And it might take too long for me to explain it.
So we're trying to solve part of that by this presentation
on the three phases of the mind, so that it's clear what they are when we make reference to them in the next four classes. Oh, the three phases of the mind, the instinctive, the intellectual, and the intuitive.
Sometimes Gurudeva says
superconscious, but in this writing I was quoting, he used intuitive. They all begin with an I, which is something I like. They all begin with in, instinctive, intellectual, intuitive. Easy to remember. So what in the world is a phase of the mind? You know, in the phase of the moon, we know that. What is a phase of the mind? Well, Gurudeva uses that phrase to talk about how the mind functions. There's three
distinct ways in which the mind functions, instinctively, intellectually,
and intuitively. So we function in three quite distinct ways. One way is quite distinct from the other. They're not even close. So we want to understand what these are and how it impacts us.
How it relates to Gurudeva's teachings. So the instinctive mind is easy to become aware of. Relates to the physical body. So impulses of our physical body, cravings, desires, digestive system, emotional mechanism that works through the physical body, systems of elimination, blood circulation, regulation of the heartbeat are all within the instinctive mind. For example, sometimes when I have a diverse meal, eating all these different things, putting it down to your stomach, you wonder, how in the world does the body know what to do with it? How does it survive? You know, a cow eats grass. One thing, it has a couple of stomachs, just to process the grass. But we can throw all these wild combinations of food down into our stomachs and still remain healthy. So that's the instinctive mind. You don't have to think about it. It happens all by itself. It's going on all by itself. You don't have to think to breathe. If we stop thinking about breathing, we stop breathing. No, it goes on. Automatic. Or instinctive. So animals is a good way to understand the instinctive mind. In fact, if you study animals carefully, if you have animals as pets, for example, or animals next door, whatever, you can understand quite a bit, learn quite a bit. Children can learn about the instinctive mind by observing the behavior of animals and talking to their parents about it. So that's a simple way. So those of you who are familiar with animals, what would be a dominant instinct? Quality you see animals exhibit, instinctive mind qualities.
Territoriality.
Feeding me now. Yes, they're very preoccupied with food. and some animals, not all are territorial. Birds are, some are territorial, some aren't. You know, they're interesting. I used to think birds, they flew around, you know, flew around. Then you realize those two birds are always there every morning on that same branch, singing the same song. They don't fly around, they're territorial. They stay right there. Okay.
Totally different machine? Yes.
Replacement? Well, it doesn't seem to be working.
Okay. Well, wait, maybe. Thank you. Anyway, we're all right for here, but okay, it could be a but one of the ones I notice a lot is fear. You know, for example, cats. Take a cat, and some cats are just love to get petted and they're sitting there.
Then there's some loud noise. They have no choice but to become fearful and run and hide. Okay. Absolutely no choice. They can't say, I wonder what that noise is. Should I run away? Am I being threatened? I'm not. They don't have that choice, right? So that gives you a sense of the instinctive mind. It's an automatic response to a stimulus. So we have automatic responses to it, just like animals. Okay, moving on, the intellectual mind. Animals don't have it. So it's a mixture of thoughts about our instinctive nature,
knowledge we've gained from others, and knowledge from our own intuitive discovery. At the time of the discovery, it's intuition, but if we remember it, it becomes intellectual. Remembered intuition is part of the intellectual mind, because it's of the past. So, as we know, the intellect loves to organize vast amounts of knowledge. We accumulate and organize, and Sri David generalizes, he says, 90% of this knowledge deals with the externality of the world and mind itself. So we're looking out. But that's what we've been trained to do. That's what we've been encouraged to do. You know, how many classes in school say, okay, let's look within. Oh, you know, they say, okay, let's look out, look without, let's observe. In fact, let's use tools to observe. So we have microscopes, telescopes, so forth. But we don't have tools to look within. So therefore our knowledge is about the external. The intellect can consume most of man's time through an incarnation, and usually does, lifetime after lifetime. We have a nice practice in the monastery. It happens a couple times in monastic training. It's a retreat. It's either 6 months long or 2 years long. But during the retreat, you can't absorb any world news. You have to give up on all world news. You can't, you know, in any form, internet, public, printed publication, television, whatever, you can't watch the news. You can't contact any family members. And in our case, you don't watch any television or video files. We don't have a television anymore. We have video files that we watch from various sources. So what does that do? It turns you within. Because we're so busy with all this external knowledge all the time. You know, oh my goodness. Let's see. Oh, Israel did that. That was disaster, right? And blockade, and then this happened over there, that way. It's all consuming. And, you know, for a family person, it's important to keep up with. We're not suggesting anyone stop world news. But for a monk, I mean, what are you going to do with the news, right? It doesn't impact your daily life. Your life is so simple, you don't need that news. So taking a step back from it can be helpful in terms of detaching from this demand to be aware of all this external knowledge. Intuitive or superconscious phase, we were talking about that at the beginning, of course. It's even more complex, organized, more refined than the instinctive or intellectual phases. mystically known as the mind of light, for when one is in this state of mind, he may see light within his head and sometimes throughout the entirety of his physical body, if his inner sight is developed enough. So just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not seeable. It just means you haven't figured out exactly where to look or how to look. Otherwise, he just begins to feel good all over as actinic energy permeates his nervous system. So actinic is a word Gurudeva uses. It means spiritual energy. So energy, when it first manifests, is actinic or spiritual. And then it becomes actinotic, or a mixture of spiritual and grosser energies, astral and physical. And then it becomes totally otic, or gross energy. So there's actinic, actinotic, and otic energy, looking from within out. So we're here, when we say actinic energy, we just mean pure spiritual energy. This was a question I was asked, so here I get to ask you. Okay. Why do we become angry and hurt others?
Usually it's a response to a hurt, isn't it? In my case, it's I've been hurt and I want to retaliate.
Yes, but why do we want to retaliate? I mean, aren't we divine beings?
Well, I don't remember that.
It's right there. It's the first sutra, right? Not even the second one. First sutra in Dancing with Shiva. We are divine beings, coming from God, returning to God. How in the world could we get angry and hurt someone? Yes, yes, but in terms of what we just talked about. Yes, we have an instinctive mind, right?
It's defensive sometimes.
It's defensive. Well, absolutely. That's the instinctive mind. We're responding. And it's not always wrong. You know, we have to protect ourselves and protect others. It depends on why. But in terms of the concepts we're talking about, we get angry and hurt others because we have an instinctive mind. If we didn't have an instinctive mind, we'd never get angry and we'd never hurt others. Why do we have an instinctive mind? Because our soul happens to be residing in a physical body. Yeah. That's why. If we were just in the soul body, boy, would life be easy. You know, no instinctive mind, no intellectual mind. We'd just be kind of an angel floating around in the clouds or something, you know, totally peaceful, like a young child when everything's going right, you know. But, obviously, we're supposed to have an instinctive mind and we're supposed to have an intellectual mind. So the key is to learn to control them. We have to learn to control them. Otherwise, we can't experience our soul nature. We're constantly dominated by the disturbances caused by the instinctive mind and the outer emotional disturbances and the disturbances caused by an overactive intellect or kind of frustrated mentally. Okay, I just explained this one. So looking again at the instinctive mind, main forces, animals, birds, fishes, reptiles, personification of the instinctive mind. Living mainly in the areas of fear, they react immediately to change. So we talked about that. They have no choice. So fear is a protective mechanism. So if fear is coming for a good reason, if the building's on fire, we should be afraid, right? But if we're worried about the world running out of oil and we're afraid of that, that's a different kind of fear. It's a theoretical fear about something that may not happen. So fear is a positive thing if there's a threat to us or to other people. So we don't want to give up fear. We want to control it. So we become fearful, we have to analyze it, sometimes rather quickly. Is this fear a legitimate fear? Should I really be afraid of something? If not, then we need to let it go. Same with anger. Anger can be a force that we're generating because we have to protect someone. You know, we have to get up the energy to do so. So, you know, if we're responsible for our family and someone's threatening it, you know, we have to protect the family. That's our duty. We can't just sit there and say, I believe in ahimsa. You know? No. We have a duty to protect our family. So anger would naturally come up. But again, if anger comes up, we have to ask ourselves, you know, should I really be angry? Do I need this protective mechanism or not? And usually in the case of anger, we don't. Anger is retaliation, as was talked about earlier. Anger is frustration. We do something, you know, the carpenter. I had a wonderful experience with the carpenter at a distance. He was building the house next door across from our vegetable garden. Some of you probably haven't seen it. There were two carpenters, and the junior one had quite a vocabulary. And things, you know, every day at least once, things would go poorly, and he'd start swearing and yelling and jump in his car and drive off with the tires squealing. You know, just get terribly angry because he got frustrated that something didn't go right. You know, he was trying to hammer a board a certain way, and maybe spend a couple hours cutting it and fitting it and put it in, and it didn't work, and he had to start all over again. So he would get frustrated, get angry, and express it, and sometimes drive away because of it. I just got so carried away. The anger just took over him. So frustration in terms of trying to do something and it not working out is a big cause of anger as well. So that's not a justifiable reason to be angry. Our intellect shouldn't allow that. Gurudeva puts it quite nicely. He says, the first steps on the spiritual path consist in learning to restrain these instinctive forces and transmute their energies into the higher natures. First step equals harness the instinctive mind. So this is one of the beauties of Gurudeva's teachings. It actually starts at the beginning. But sometimes it feels like spiritual teachings, you know, the first day of school is high school instead of grade one. You know, you're starting with something that's so advanced, you know, how can you sustain it? Even if you manage to do it a few times, the instinctive nature comes up and it all falls apart on you. You don't have any foundation. So this is a systematic way. Gurudeva's teachings are very systematic, just like going to school, one grade at a time, repeating what you learned, you know, at the beginning of the next grade, make sure you didn't forget it, and going on in a systematic way. So this is the first grade. He says it even more specifically. The spiritual path begins with the avoidance of wrongful action and can be likened to the early training of a child in which he is told, don't do this, do this instead. So that's the beginning of the spiritual path. Avoidance of wrongful action, which is, you know, expressing anger, is a classic example. Retaliating. Okay, so we don't have enough time to get through the next section. So let's ask if there's any questions on the three phases of the mind. You think we're clear on instinctive, intellectual, intuitive phases of the mind, or the way the mind functions? The instinctive mind comes along with the physical body. If we were just a soul body, we wouldn't have it, nothing to control, but we need to learn to control it. Intellectual mind tends to ramify. It just goes on and on and on and on and about things. So intellect is very good if you're focusing it in a productive way, but otherwise it's like talking without producing anything. It's just a waste of energy. We want to turn the intellect on and off. Intellect should be like a computer, properly used. Computer is a great tool if it's properly used. We sit down, we do something, it saves us so much time. Years ago, you used to have to go to a library, or even on an island like, have to go to some other library, library here is small, to find out something, you'd have to go to a library. It could take a couple of days to find out something. Now you just go somewhere on the internet, you get the knowledge, you do what you're doing, and you've got it. So we want to use the intellect just like we use a computer. We turn it on, we do something useful with it, and we turn it off. It shouldn't just be running all the time. Otherwise, it's like going to internet sites that are distracting us. Yes?
Do you think the intellect is so time-consuming because it's constantly trying to rationalize fears that are coming from the instinctive side?
Yes, that's definitely one of the reasons it goes on more than it should. And that's caused by not having a structure for handling the fear or the concern. You know, we don't know what to do with the fear or concern. So it repeats itself. So if thoughts are repeating themselves in the intellect that we would prefer weren't repeating themselves, maybe we can find a structure in Gurudeva's teachings to stop it from repeating itself, to solve it, sort itself out. You know, for example, a major one is being an adult and resenting one or both of your parents for how they raised you. You know, that's a rain. Huh? You okay out there? You're not wet? Okay. Standing in the rain but not getting wet. Huh? Yeah, that's the water on the lotus leaves. Huh? But an example is, let's say we seriously resent one or both of our parents for how they raised us. They weren't very nice. And we think about it. And that stirs us up now and then. So Gurudeva gives us a tool for clearing that up. Vasana Daha Tantra, writing it down and burning it up, and also putting a picture of a parent there and putting a flower in front of it for 31 days is one of them. So you try and identify the nature of the issue and look for a tool to get rid of it. That's Gurudeva's approach. There are tools to change things, and one of them is simply the self-concept. Positive self-concept. Yes, I get profound self-confidence and positive self-concept. Switch sometimes. So one of the reasons we think about things is our self-concept is not strong enough. There's some doubt there about us. And relates to the kind of thing you were mentioning. And we want to change the concept of who we are. We're a divine being. It's right in the first sutra, as I was talking about. You know, we're a divine being, came from God, returning to God, going through all these experiences. So we're a divine being. It doesn't mean that which surrounds our divinity is perfect. You know, we make mistakes. We have an instinctive mind, we have an intellectual mind. But the core of us, who we are, is a divine being. But the problem is, we think with a personality looking in at the divine. And the personality, of course, always has flaws. So we can't perfect the flaws in the personality. We have to, instead of being the outer looking at the inner, we have to be the inner looking at the outer. Because the inner is always perfect. And then we try and handle the outer as the best we can. You know, if we do something wrong, we make appropriate apologies. If we make a mistake, we learn from it and try not to do it again, etc. You know, our outside is never perfect. But that doesn't bother us because our inside is. Something like that is, I think, the answer to your question. So it's a shift in perspective. And plus taking specific tools to get rid of whatever it is that's nagging us. Identifying it and observing it, identifying it. And we have to be able to observe our mind to change it. We have to be able to know we can change our mind to change it. Lots of people, you would say, well, you're kind of angry. And they'd say, well, that's the way I am. That's just the way I am, you know. I've always been that way. Well, guess what? You can change the way you've always been. here we got 20 ways you can change that. Yes.
Would deep breathing help control the runaway instinct of mind?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. Deep breathing, regulating breathing, relaxing, even just relaxing. You know, it precedes deep breathing. Just relaxing helps regulate the mind. We get so tense in modern life. You know, the pressure of modern life keeps getting worse every year. I'm not sure how it is here, but I think it's worse in Asia. You know, Asia, they're just...
changing.
They're eking out more and more hours without paying you for them. And you have to work them or you're afraid the younger person will take your job. You know, it's unfair. And then you've got tuition. You not only go to school in Asia, you go to school after school. Because the school you went to wasn't that good, and you got to go to a better school after school to really learn something. So you end up going to school all day, even when you're 10 years old. You know, there's no time to play. So lots of pressure in Asia that you don't have here. So that all makes us tense. Even kids are tense. So if we can relax in one way or another, hot yoga is helpful for relaxing. Just a hot bath is helpful. Taking a walk, you know, instead of coming, you know, the example we have in one of our talks is instead of coming home from the lawyer's office totally frustrated, sharing that frustration with your spouse, why not take a walk through the park first, calm down, and end up at home and a more balanced person. So like that, we need to control the stress and relax and breathe deeply, and all that helps us control ourselves. Okay, well, we're just going to touch on this so we don't get confused on it.